This is Jeff Blanford again. Unfortunately, we're having trouble reaching my guest today. So I'm going to give you some rundown on some news about Iran, which we'll be talking about. You may have heard this morning on NPR, there is a meeting in Warsaw, which is interesting capital of a country that is moving faster and faster to the right, as is much of Eastern Europe that used to be under Soviet control, and like Hungary and Poland. Authoritarianism happens to be in Eastern Europe, but that's a government that supports the United States policies, and the United States is having a meeting there with representatives of foreign governments, not the high-level foreign ministers that the United States wanted, because the goal of this operation is to put pressure on Iran. And reporting in the New York Times, speaking in front of the event, was a familiar character you have heard about, Rudolph Giuliani, who is an advisor to President Trump, and he also represents an organization called Mujahideen Khalq, or the MEK, which used to be considered a terrorist organization by the United States, an Iranian organization that actually fought with Saddam against Iran during the war and was taken off the terrorist list and now is being represented by Rudy Giuliani. In July, he attended a Paris rally sponsored that the police later said was the target of a failed bombing attempt by Iran. Well, as busloads of Mujahideen Khalq activists arrived outside the Polish National Stadium, where the diplomatic meetings will be held, a marching band belted out songs of revolution under an ashen sky. Posters around the parking lot bore the faces of people the organizers said had been killed by the Iranian government. The crowd waved Iranian flags and held aloft giant yellow balloons with the words "regime change" written in block letters. Mr. Giuliani echoed their cheers. "We want to see regime change in Iran," he said. People who brought us the war in Iraq and were never held accountable are the ones behind the war, the march toward war in Iran. Most notably, John Bolton, who is considered so out of whack by the Republicans that when George W. Bush wanted to make him the United Nations ambassador for the U.S., even the Republican senators would not support him, and Bush made the appointment during the Christmas recess. And later on, the ambassador for Israel jokingly said that Bolton was the sixth man in their office. And last November, I reported to you earlier that the Zionist Organization of Israel, ultra-right organization, I should say, gave Bolton, an American official, the Defender of Israel Award. With what you heard playing with Nancy Pelosi and Charles Schumer sitting on the stage of the Israeli-American Council, a meeting that is not reported in the U.S. media other than in the Miami Herald and the Jewish press, just like the meetings of AIPAC that are attended by 16,000 to 18,000 people. The speeches made by Pelosi and Schumer and other American politicians are not reported either. You have to see them, read them in the Jewish press, or go to the AIPAC website. It's an amazing experience, and if you would watch and see the degree of love and affection that American politicians place for the government of a foreign country, a repressive government, government that has held the Palestinians in captivity and under occupation, that has made war on Gaza three times, that has made war on Lebanon several times, and yet we're told that they have shared values. We share values with them. The only one I can think of is we dispossess the indigenous people who lived in the lands of both our countries. John Bolton is quite amazing. He's called for bombing Iran publicly. He's written about that, op-eds in the New York Times. And he replaced H.R. McMaster, who is not no less a hawk, but he supported, as did Tillerson, the Iranian nuclear deal, as did Jim Mattis, the now resigned Secretary of Defense, because they saw this a way to defuse the potential of a war with a major Middle East country that was not threatening the U.S. in any fashion. But for Sheldon Adelson, who handed $35 million to Trump, started dictating Trump's policies, and two of them fired Tillerson and replaced him with Mike Pompeo, New York Times reported this, and fire McMaster and replace him with John Bolton. Because like Saban, who I mentioned in the article, his one issue is Israel. But he was born in Egypt, then went to Israel, then came to the United States, became naturalized. Adelson is an American-born citizen who admits in Israel his first loyalty is to Israel. And when your people are thinking and worrying about the Robert Mueller investigation, do you think it's a chance or possibility that there would be an Israeli gate, that American politicians who have thrown their support to Israel secretly without informing the rest of the American public, and they are well aware, Pelosi and Schumer, that these speeches that they make, these interviews that they make at these Israeli organizations, the pro-Israel organizations like the Israeli American Council or AIPAC, will not be reported in the U.S. media. So they can say almost anything they want to get the applause and the funds from the well-heeled donors to AIPAC. And at the AIPAC meetings, to make sure the congressmen are recognized, they read like an honor roll of all the members of Congress who are in attendance. Now, unfortunately, that story is covered by no one in the national media, and it's actually barely covered in the Jewish media. It is covered in the Israeli media, because what happens in the United States is considered vital to Israel's future, because obviously we protect them in the United Nations international fora. The one time that the United States did not veto a resolution critical of Israel was just after the elections. And there was a resolution critical of Israeli occupation and settlement building, which, for a historical record, the Obama administration, instead of vetoing, as it surely would have had Hillary Clinton been elected, allowed the resolution to pass by abstaining. The story we heard in the American press was that Jared Kushner had approached Michael Flynn, and the Israelis wanted Michael Flynn to speak to the ambassadors in the other UN countries to get them to postpone the vote on criticizing Israel's settlement. And the ambassadors weren't going for it. But the Israeli press had a different story. What the U.S. press doesn't report is the close connections between Vladimir Putin and Netanyahu, who's made almost 8 state visits in the last 3 years to Moscow as the guest of Putin. And what happened was Putin owed Netanyahu a favor, because after the annexation by Russia of Crimea, the U.S. introduced a resolution calling for sanctions against Russia. And the Israeli representative absented himself. And this angered the Obama administration. It was discussed at a press conference in Washington, but the story was not reported in the U.S. papers. And then, so when Netanyahu made an effort to get the New Zealand foreign minister, which was a co-sponsor of the resolution criticizing Israel and the settlements in 2019, Netanyahu called the foreign minister of New Zealand to say, please pull the resolution. And the foreign minister would not do that, whereupon Netanyahu threatened sanctions against New Zealand on the part of Israel. And at that point, he called Putin and asked Putin what he could do to help stop the resolution. Putin called his ambassador, who's now passed away, and asked him to talk to the ambassadors, fellow ambassadors at the Security Council, and asked them to postpone the vote on the resolution until after Trump took office. But the ambassadors of these countries that are really growing very tired of Israel, they have Israel lobbies, but they're not as powerful as ours. They refused to postpone the vote, and they voted for it 14 to nothing, with one abstention, sanctioning Israel. No enforcement particulars in there, but just getting on the record that the UN considers Israeli settlements to be illegal and should be stopped, as well as the treatment of the Palestinians in the occupied territories. So I try to, on Takes on the World, I bring you stories that you're not going to hear anywhere else. The fact that quite a number of Jewish writers, mainstream Jewish writers, not radical Jewish writers. Well, Glenn Greenwald is fairly radical, but I quoted you from J.J. Goldberg, who was the editor of the Jewish Weekly Forward, which is the oldest Jewish newspaper in the United States, who still writes columns for them. He wrote a book called Jewish Power, in which he went in and delved into the power structure of the Jewish establishment and its influence on American policy. And he wasn't doing it to criticize it. He was just doing it to put it on record of what is fact and what isn't fact. So when you have these members of Congress, 45 of them now have attacked Ilhan Omar for simply telling the truth. She may not have phrased it in a way they like when she referred to the Benjamins. Of course, she was referring to $100 bills. But it's those $100 bills that have moved members of Congress to give Israel a waiver on everything, on human rights and the notion that we have any shared values with them. Most Americans have no idea what the Israelis have to say about the United States in their media, which is mostly a show of contempt. They love Trump, however, because he's the most overtly pro-Israel president in history. And it doesn't really matter whether or not the rest of the Americans, what the Americans care about Israel, what the Americans care about the Palestinians is irrelevant in Trump's calculations. He has Sheldon Adelson behind him, and Sheldon Adelson is the biggest funder of organizations like Birthright Israel, which pays for young American Jews to go over to a two-week vacation, paid vacation to Israel, to familiarize themselves with a country not of their birth, but their so-called homeland, to alienate them against, to push them to put Israel before the country of their birth, which is the United States. This is a situation that, again, you will read about in the Israeli press, and the Jewish press covers it quite well, and also critically. But it is a no-go place. It's like you cannot talk about the Israel lobby. You cannot talk about the money that it spends on members of Congress when it's all backed up by fact. So the other morning, for example, Steve Inskeep interviewed a New Jersey congressman who happens to be Jewish, and must be new, I never heard of him, about what Omar had said. And he, like some other members of Congress, said they're really hurt by her remarks. And instead of explaining or contradicting what she said, what he did, this Gottheimer, was go into a Israel propaganda piece about Palestinian terrorism and anti-Semitism and everything, not dealing with the issue. Is it factual or not that hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars of Jewish money, representing a very small section of the Jewish community, go to support the politicians of both our parties? This is anyway, that is one thing that was interesting. As I mentioned earlier in my introduction, was that all of the prospective Democratic Party candidates, with the exception of Amy Klobuchar, some of whom were well known as being in the pro-Israel lobby's back pocket, like Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, voted against the resolution, the Senate resolution, because they have become aware and have been aware since 2012 that the base of the Democratic Party, particularly its younger voters, no longer support Israel, as did their parents and did earlier generations. It's not a coincidence this has happened as Israel has moved to the right, and Netanyahu has shown that he has total disregard for the world opinion and for the Palestinian community. And, of course, there's no precedent for a prime minister of another country speaking to two joint sessions of the U.S. Congress, as Netanyahu did when Obama was president, and getting 29 standing ovations on one occasion, just 2 days after he addressed down Obama in the White House, like Obama was some errant schoolboy, and there were the Republicans, joint houses, both houses of Congress, standing up 29 times to applaud a foreign leader who has come to this country to attack the President of the United States and his policies, which at that time was to sign a peace deal with Iran, and which Netanyahu was trying to torpedo from the very beginning. Some other news on the Iran front. Thanks to the Obama and the Democratic Party, led by Pelosi, not investigating why and who was behind the war on Iraq, no one paid any price for attacking Iraq, and there are no apologies coming from the U.S. government for the crimes against humanity that war carried out, nor the destabilization of the entire region, which has led to the massive refugee problem. There is no acknowledgement of that on the part of those in Washington and our mainstream media. And so Trump has not only reimplemented sanctions against Iran, but he is demanding that Iraq, its immediate neighbor, to stop buying energy from Iran. This is from the New York Times. I'm going to read you of February 11th. The Trump administration is pressuring Iraq to stop buying energy from its neighbor and sole foreign supplier, Iran, in what has become a major point of conflict between Washington and Baghdad. Iraqi leaders, fearing that a further shortfall in power would lead to mass protests and political instability in their electricity-starved country, are pushing back on the demand, which is rooted in President Trump's sanctions against Iran. The dispute has frayed American diplomacy with Baghdad as Iraq tries to steady itself after the U.S. military withdrawal in 2011 and the campaign against the Islamic State. Iraq's defiance further jeopardizes Mr. Trump's goal of getting all nations to comply with sanctions after withdrawing from the deal to limit Tehran's nuclear program last year. Already, European nations have set up a legal financial mechanism to do business with Iran. China and India are resisting American efforts at prodding them to cut off oil purchases. Tensions rose after Mr. Trump said on February 3rd that he planned to have American troops who have returned to Iraq, quote, watch Iran, unquote, despite Baghdad's need to maintain cordial ties with his fellow Shiite neighbor. Mr. Trump's comments added momentum to proposed legislation in Iraq that would limit the movement and activities of American troops. Maybe we'll invade there again. Said Prime Minister Adel Abdul Mahdi of Iraq, the people of Iraq have suffered from the blockade and are aware of the harm done to the people by their actions. He said last week after a meeting with the governor of Iran's central bank, Abdel Nasser Hamati. He was referring to 13 years of crippling sanctions against imposed on Iraq by the United States when Saddam Hussein was in power. Iraq will not be part of the sanctions regime against Iran and any other people, Mr. Abdel Mahdi said. Mr. Hamati said he hoped Iraq and Iran would cooperate more in banking, which could also weaken American sanctions. American officials are seeking to cut off Iraqi purchases of natural gas and electricity, even though the country relies on those for a good portion of its energy needs. Iraq's energy production and grid capabilities have lagged since the American-led invasion of 2003, and blackouts in cities are common, even with the current purchases. The energy shortfall is especially acute in the sweltering summers, which has led to large protests that became national crises. Iranian natural gas, is the single most critical energy import in Iraq, but American officials say purchases must end now because gas falls under the American sanctions. And the Trump administration has told Iraq's leaders that they have until late March to end electricity purchases amounting to about 1.2 gigawatts. Officials in Baghdad say there's no easy substitute for either one because it would take 3 years or more to adequately build up Iraq's energy infrastructure. Think of that, folks. There's nothing in the article, and there's nothing in any of the editorials that I've seen that speaks about the arrogance, the outright arrogance, impudence of the United States, which destroyed this country of Iraq, destabilized the entire region, and now demanding that it cut off its supply of energy from Iran, which has never attacked the United States. It's outrage that keeps me going. I'm not optimistic about what's going to happen. I think we're going to have another war. The Justice Department says that a former U.S. Air Force counterintelligence specialist allegedly gave national defense secrets to Iran, as according to an indictment unsealed today by the Justice Department. Monica Witt defected to Iran in 2013, authorities said. She allegedly provided security officials of the Islamic Republic with the code name and classified mission of a U.S. Defense Department special access program. Four Iranian nationals also were named in the same indictment with Witt. The Iranians faced charges including conspiracy, computer intrusions, and identity theft targeting Witt's former co-workers. Witt left the Air Force in 2008 and worked as a contractor for 2 years, officials said. Her work for the government ended in 2010. Eventually she's still in Iran, but this is another way of putting on the pressure on Iran. Curiously enough, this comes at the very same time of this meeting in Warsaw. Now, one might say with some legitimacy that heavy sanctions such as being imposed on Iran by the United States, not the world, are an act of war. Matter of fact, if you go back to the pre-World War II, it was the United States sanctions against Japan, which led, I later learned, to the overthrow of a more peaceful-leaning Japanese government and its replacement by its warlords who sought a war with the United States in retaliation for the sanctions the U.S. had imposed on Japan. And that subsequent records turned out the United States secretly or knew about this, was hoping that it would happen because the United States was looking for a way to enter into World War II, but the American people were against entering the war, so the United States needed a provocation. And later details, documents reveal that the United States was aware of the attack that was going to come on Pearl Harbor. It was a story I resisted for years because I grew up under FDR and he was my hero. But it seems the United States knew that the Japanese were going to attack and when they were going to attack, and our sailors at Pearl Harbor were guinea pigs, sacrifices for a higher cause, to justify the U.S. entering World War II and becoming the world's supreme global power that it has. It's now 10 minutes before 11. I had hoped to have Gareth Porter, who I've interviewed many times on this program, as my guest. We had problems last time because of a faulty phone number, and this time I don't know what the problem was, because he had confirmed it the other day. But maybe because of this story happening in Warsaw, he's been called away for actually to make some comments on a TV program, although mainstream media usually stays away from people who are going to criticize U.S. actions in Iran. But there are some programs like Democracy Now!, or there's a reader-supported Real News Network is a very good news program, televised news out of Canada. It covers U.S. policy, which I do recommend, Real News. The war in Syria has been seen as somewhat of a proxy war between Israel and Iran, but it's Israel doing attacking. Israel has launched over 200 attacks on Syria during the Syrian war. 200 attacks. Every one of those attacks is a violation of international law. They're considered a crime against humanity. They have not been attacked by Syria or Iran. These attacks in Syria are acts of war, and they have been allowed by Mr. Putin. He coordinates, the Russian Air Force evidently coordinates Israel's attacks with the Israeli Air Force. So Israel claims that these attacks in Syria are on Iranian positions or Iranian shipments to Hezbollah, even though Hezbollah in Lebanon gets shipments by sea and elsewhere. But these are just excuses for Israel to flex its muscle and try and provoke the Iranians into attack. Supposedly, the Iranians had a drone over several months ago, which the Israelis shot down. But this was such a small story that it really didn't have legs, although the Israelis tried to make something out of it. So here we have Israel trying to provoke another war in the Middle East, which on its behalf, and it will get, it is counting on the support of the U.S. Congress, which is in the Israeli lobby pocket. This is a situation which hopefully you'll hear more about, but you're not going to hear or read much about it in the mainstream media because it would require questioning the U.S. commitment to Israel and the role that the neocons, the pro-Israel neocons of the Project for New American Century played in fomenting the Iraq War in 2003. You'll never hear, even in the interesting movie that was played called Vice, which recently played here in Ukiah, about Dick Cheney pushing for the war in Iraq, you had the actor playing Colin Powell doing his dutiful thing, making a speech to the UN and lying. But you didn't see in that movie was any role for the pro-Israel lobby. In fact, what they added into the movie was a lie that Israel was against the U.S. war in Iraq, when the facts show that Netanyahu publicly called for it, Ariel Sharon publicly called for it, Shimon Peres publicly called for it, but this was Hollywood, and so they had to make it seem as if Israel was against the war in Iraq, when in fact it was for it. And I remember the defense minister of Israel, Shlomo Glantz, I forget his name, the defense minister of Israel at the time, saying, okay, now that takes care of Iraq, next take care of Syria and Iran. This was in the Israeli media, of course, not in the U.S. press, because U.S. press does everything it possibly can to shield Israel from attack, from criticism, and we can assume this will happen again. There is no criticism of Israel's continuing bombardments in Syria, and one of the things we see is that the Congress wants to keep U.S. troops in Syria. It's a kind of, where Trump wants them in Iraq to keep an eye on Iran. So we're not going to know how that all that works out. But the likelihood of U.S. forces withdrawing from the Middle East at any time in the near future is next to nil. It's a shame that so much time is being spent on our media and in examining Russiagate and the so-called interference by Israel, or excuse me, by Russia in the U.S. elections, when whatever interference was done by Russia, it pales, it shrivels to nothing compared to the influence that Israel has on the U.S. media. But it's gone so far, I'm afraid we can never expect to see the equivalent of an investigation of such interference. And we see when Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are pledging their loyalty to Israel, to Haim Saban, this Israeli-American, when Nancy Pelosi, who you hear all the time on the air, and challenging President Trump, but is she doing it on the behalf of the United States, or is she doing it pragmatically because she knows how powerful the Israel lobby is? Whatever it is, the American people are not being informed about it. And the range of my broadcast, which goes up online, is very limited. This has been Jeff Mungford. Thanks for listening.